This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Five suspects in the Nairobi hotel terrorist attack claimed by Al-Shabaab appeared in court Friday. Kenyan security officers requested the four men and one woman be detained for 30 days.
That's Mohammed Yusuf reporting. Details coming up. Also, African Union calls for a suspension of the announcement of the results of the troubled election in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And police fire tear gas and live ammunition today as protests against Sudan's President Omar Bashir broke out again in the capital. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Zimbabwe today is facing a total internet shutdown after a day-long violent crackdown on people protesting a dramatic fuel price increase. There are reports of badly injured people streaming into a hospital in the capital after alleged assaults by security forces. To shed light on the matter, we have in studio Gib Dube from the VOA's Zimbabwe service. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you, sir.
Has calm been restored in Zimbabwe? What's the latest?
Now, the latest is that, some shops are open and, some were obviously looted. And the army and the police are still patrolling the streets. And some people are appearing in court in large numbers. We saw yesterday and today Pastor Ivan Mawarire of hashtag This Flag Campaign, who is the mastermind behind the whole thing, actually appearing in court. And then the internet is still shut, it comes sometimes, but in drips and drabs. And then Facebook, Twitter, and all the social media platforms are actually shut down. So you can't communicate with the people in Zimbabwe. But some have found a way, of going around it. They're using the virtual private network in which, they're circumventing the whole system. And then in terms of what was happening in Harare today also, we saw some ZANU-PF activists actually riding some vehicles, parading or making some processions, maybe showing some bit of force. The opposition MDC and other opposition parties, including the Workers' Union, the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, all the officials are in hiding. Some of them have been arrested. And then outside that, we know that President Emmerson Mnangagwa was in Belarus and he's on his way to Kazakhstan and divorce in Switzerland. So, but people are saying, come back home and solve all these kind of issues, but he's not going to do that. And then the government is actually calling these people that were protesting terrorists. There are some people who are actually wearing plain clothes, who are actually going around shooting and doing all those things. But some opposition people are saying those were government agents masquerading as terrorists. So that is disputable. So we are yet to see exactly what is going on. And then there's a court case that has been filed. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights has actually filed a court case to challenge the shutdown of the internet.
Let me go back to Ivan Mawarire. You said he was the mastermind. At first, he was charged with inciting violence in social media, but Mawarire is facing new charges of trying to subvert President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government. So what is the real accusation on this guy?
So if you look at the charges, they are similar to the charges that were laid against him in 2016 in July, when there were similar protests. Initially, they charged him with inciting violence and then changed that to subverting a constitutionally elected government. So maybe they are going to change again. So it's not yet certain whether that is going to stick or not. But at the end of the day, he's facing charges of subverting a constitutionally elected government.
Are international calls for restraint being heeded by Zimbabwe's security forces? Like you mentioned, Mnangagwa is out of the country at the forum in Davos, living what's a former military commander and vice president, Constantino Chiwenga. So what is the world saying? What's the West saying? What's the AU saying?
Now, the West, let me cite the USA. The USA government is saying it is very, very worried about the situation in Harare. They are calling for restraint. They are saying that the government should actually exercise some form of pardoning some of the people that have been doing some of these things and actually not using brute force. they've been, yes, the Zimbabwean security forces have actually been using brute force. The IMF, for example, as well, has said that how can Zimbabwe be doing this, yet it is carrying out this so-called re-engagement with the West. And then we saw Britain and the EU, they are also condemning what is happening in Zimbabwe. And then we've got, you know, calls for, you know, restraint all around. And people are saying, what is happening in Zimbabwe is a tragedy. Because this is a country where there was a bit of hope after Mr. Robert Mugabe was removed from power. But now they're saying things are getting worse. And in this case, you know, because Mr. Mnangagwa and his government have actually deployed soldiers in the streets and all those kind of things. So people are not comfortable with that. And the West really is saying, no, this must end. And just to add one more thing, Senators Chris Coons and Cory Booker, these are Democrats, have also said there is no way that Zimbabwe can be doing such a thing. They should stop.
So lastly, has the internet been restored, or what is the situation
there?
The
internet has not been restored. Actually, there is a big body called the Post and Telecommunications Regulatory Authority of Zimbabwe, which is in charge of overseeing these service providers. So it has actually instructed you know, organizations like companies like Econet, Wireless, Telcel Zimbabwe, and others to actually shut down Facebook, shut down, you know, Twitter, and all those kind of things. So it's not yet restored.
Gibbs Dube from VOA's Zimbabwe service, thanks for your input.
Thank you so much.
Kenyan security agencies are seeking more suspects in Tuesday's terrorist attack in Nairobi that killed at least 21 people. Kenyan media report at least 7 arrests and 5 suspects appeared in court today. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
5 suspects in the Nairobi hotel terrorist attack claimed by Al-Shabaab appeared in court Friday. Kenyan security officers requested the 4 men and 1 woman be detained for 30 days while they complete the investigation. Authorities searched a house northwest of Nairobi Thursday, where one suspect is believed to have lived. Neighborhood butcher Paul Kariuki says the named suspect, Salim Gichunge, had visited his shop many times. He says he's in a shock that a guy he knew carried out the attack. I could not believe he did that. I'm surprised, says Kariuki. But not all neighbors of Gichunge are rushing to judgment. One woman, who does not wish to be identified, lives just a few blocks away.
We're quite uncertain about what is happening. It's quite shocking. It was very unexpected. We've been living with this guy in the same neighborhood for the last 3 months. He was also on our WhatsApp group for the estate. Has made some contribution towards some of the activities and projects that we have.
The suspect's last message to the group, a comment on improving neighborhood security. Somali terrorist group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for Tuesday's attack on the Dusit Hotel and office complex. Security analyst Mwende Mbijiwe says the militant group is changing tactics to use so-called sleeper cells within Kenya.
They were able to camouflage and to hide and to stay among that community without anybody ever detecting that actually these people are living in our midst.
Nairobi's Lee neighborhood, which has a large ethnic Somali population, is sometimes vilified as a haven for terrorists. But on Friday, Nairobi's Somali community rallied in a show of solidarity against terrorism. Crowd chanted, "We will defeat them," and shops closed their doors for an hour to honor victims of the attack. Yusuf Hassan is a Somali-Kenyan lawmaker.
We feel that we stand together with the rest of Kenyans. We are part and parcel of Kenya. The problems of Kenya are our problems. The successes of Kenya are our successes. And we cannot be separated as a community. And therefore, the community is here to say no to terrorism, no to extremism.
As Kenya mourns those killed and recovers from yet another terrorist attack, many will be asking how to stop these all too frequent tragedies. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The African Union surprised many Africa political analysts by calling for a suspension of the announcement of the results from the troubled election in the Democratic Republic of Congo. However, the DRC has hit back by saying its top court is considering the opposition leader's call for a recount and saying the court will rule whatever happens. It is yet another wrinkle in an already complicated situation. Today, the United Nations Human Rights Arm said it had documented 34 people killed and nearly 250 arbitrary arrests since provisional results were issued last week. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Strong words from the African Union. The body this week called for the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo to delay the announcement of final election results because of serious doubts about provisional results that gave the presidency to a candidate who was not expected to win. Last month's long-delayed poll was marked by chaos, irregularities, delays, technical difficulties, uncertainty, and rumors that the government of longtime President Joseph Kabila would manipulate election results in its favor. But the nation was surprised last week when the Electoral Commission announced that the presidential favorite did not win, and surprised yet again when the commission declared the second most popular opposition leader, Felix Tshisekedi, as the winner. That result contrasted with predictions by research organizations and by the influential Catholic Church that opposition candidate Martin Fayulu had won by a decisive margin. Fayulu filed a request to the Constitutional Court for a recount. Electoral officials have said a new president will be inaugurated on January 22nd. Congo analyst Stephanie Walters of the Institute for Security Studies says the African Union's strong words on the DRC are rare. Its election observer missions, in fact, often praise African polls that other observer missions have found to be troubled.
Their decision to ask for a suspension of the proclamation of the final results is really quite a departure. It's a bold move. And I understand they're going to be following up with a mission that we'll be visiting in the next few days. And I think it's a very strong, unexpected move from the AU.
More expected was the government's initial reaction to the AU statement when it said the Constitutional Court would proceed. The Congolese government has generally rejected what it deems foreign interference in the election, including rejecting donor aid to organize it. Analyst Claude Kamemba, who has long maintained that Congo's neighbors, especially Rwanda, have outsized influence in DRC politics, says he's still thinking through what he, too, thought was a surprising statement from the AU.
Looking at what happened could be seen to be a correct decision from a continental body like the AU. But it raises questions because of the people who have decided who took part in that decision and what does it mean and what are the reason, the real reason behind such a decision.
He says he believes the government's reaction will fill in that part of the story. If, he says, the Congolese government continues to hold firm against a Fayulu victory, then it will mean the AU statement was not genuine. If the government appears to relent to the AU by delaying or by nullifying the election, then it means that powerful leaders like Rwandan President Paul Kagame were behind the AU's push and that they meant business. Walters notes that the AU statement is essentially unenforceable. It's not clear, she says, what it will do now.
I think this is precedent setting, but I think it's too early to say what this means because we have to see what happens next. We have to see what happens with the visit, whether Congo even accepts the visit of the chairperson and the other people who are meant to be going, and then what the AU does if Congo doesn't accept that. And then we'll know a little bit more about whether or not this is precedent setting. But I do think that it is a very important step forward. It's certainly stronger pressure than we've seen the AU apply in similar situations elsewhere.
The election, which originally was to have been held in 2016, could bring the first peaceful transition of power in the DRC's modern history. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Police fired tear gas and live ammunition today as protests against Sudan President Omar al-Bashir broke out again in the capital. Witnesses say about 5,000 mourners had just attended the funeral for a 60-year-old man who was shot dead in Khartoum's Buri district as police dispersed a protest yesterday. A child and another person also were killed. Amid a worsening economic crisis, protests started December 19th after the government tripled bread prices. They have since hit at least 14 cities and have grown into a wider anti-government movement. The government says 24 people have died. Human rights groups put the number at more than 40, with more than 1,000 arrested. Protesters today vowed not to stop and chanted freedom, peace, justice. Some threw rocks at police. Bashir has run the country for 30 years. He says he will not leave office until he is in the 2020 elections. Uganda and South Sudan have agreed to renew border surveillance at disputed border posts in Uganda's Lamoa district. The decision was reached during a meeting between Ugandan officials and a delegation of South Sudan officials in Lamawo. The officials are seeking a solution to the dispute as they wait the demarcation exercise. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Since 2012, the Pajok Payama Luo ethnic group in South Sudan has claimed that a 14-kilometer stretch of land spanning into Uganda at the Ngomoromo border point belongs to them. The group accuses Uganda government of tampering with coordinates of the Global Positioning System GPS to grab their land. Ugandan authorities insist the contested land belongs to Uganda. This has resulted into border disputes, and armed gangs from South Sudan have repeatedly crossed to the Ugandan side to plunder, destroy property, and sow terror. Delegations from South Sudan and Uganda have met to find a way to resolve the impasse. James Nibson Chidega is the Lamoa Resident District Commissioner and also is in charge of security in the district.
We are only charting way forward on how we can stay peacefully, properly, and also look at between us who are the trouble causers that is making this country not to have the peace that we want to see. This is why the meeting is here. So I think for our people in South Sudan, for our people in Uganda, they should settle so that we see that the two countries develop well.
Colonel Richard Walekula is from the 5th Infantry Division of the UPDF, which has been deployed to guard the border. He says the border conflicts, if not checked, are likely to strain diplomatic and trade ties between Uganda and South Sudan.
South Sudan and Uganda, we are one. We are the members of the East African community. We share the common goal. We share the common border. Our people coexist. We share the tribes. We share our interests in most cases. The peace and the state of the people is determinant to development of any nation in this world.
South Sudan remains the biggest importer of Uganda's commodities, with close to 15,000 Ugandan traders operating across the border. Tobialo Alberio is the governor of Tarit State in the Eastern Equatorial in South Sudan. He led the South Sudan delegation to the meeting. He assured he would crack a whip on any errant groups who intend to drag the two sister nations into conflict.
So we will not allow the two countries to be misled by some enemies of peace. We will not allow that one. We will continue to work for peace, because peace is what the whole nation or the whole world is looking for. We will not be able to confuse our forces, government, the community, on the small issues of the border. The border will be there, it will continue, and the human being will continue to coexist.
In 2016, an African Union team started on the demarcation of the Uganda-South Sudan international border. But its work was halted following renewed tensions between President Salva Kiir and his then-deputy Riek Machar. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 23 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Kenyan security agencies are seeking more suspects in Tuesday's terror attack in Nairobi that killed at least 21 people. The African Union surprised calls for a suspension of the announcement of the results of the troubled election in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And in Zimbabwe today is facing a total internet shutdown after a day-long violent crackdown on people protesting dramatic fuel price increases. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A nationwide strike rocked Tunisia yesterday to protest the government's refusal to raise salaries for almost 700,000 public servants. Thousands chanted, "The people want the overthrow of the government," the same slogan used 8 years ago in Tunisia's popular uprising. The North African country is under pressure from the International Monetary Fund to freeze public sector wages to help reduce the budget deficit. But the powerful Tunisian labor union accused the government of opting for confrontation with public servants to please the IMF. Sarah Yerkes, a fellow at Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi the significance of the popular dissatisfaction and how to deal with it.
I think this is a clear sign that people remain incredibly frustrated with the government, in particular the fact that the government has not been able to deliver on the demands of the revolution. The people have not seen dramatic positive impacts on their own lives, on their economic performance, and on their social situation. So they remain frustrated, and they're using the same slogans they used almost exactly 8 years ago to make the same demands.
But Tunisian government has limited resources, and the political turmoil has deterred foreign investment needed to improve the economic situation. What options does the government has to raise the standard of living for Tunisians?
It's very difficult for the government right now. They can't simply raise salaries every time either the labor union asks or some member of the public sector asks. What they need to do is actually figure out a way to address the needs of the people and, as you mentioned, to attract investment. You do that in part by addressing corruption. You also do that by addressing the political stagnation and the political crisis that's been ongoing for about a year now. And also finding some way to bring short-term wins to the people. You need to help them get through what will be very difficult pain in the short term to get through the long-term positivity of economic reform.
Tunisia is under pressure from the International Monetary Fund to freeze public sector wages as a part of needed measures to reduce budget deficit. But the labor union accused the government of opting for confrontation with the public servants to please the IMF. What's your take on that?
I think, again, this is an incredibly difficult position that the government's in. They both need the IMF desperately, but they also need the unions. The unions have shown through this, which is now the second full national strike, that they have the power to bring the country to a halt. So the government needs to figure out a way to get around this. And again, this involves something, way to address how do you get people out of the public sector. The public sector is bloated, it's too expensive, but you can't just ignore the people's needs and the people's demands. So one thing to do is to try to increase the number of jobs in the private sector, to try to bring more Social Security benefits, some way that people's lives and people's livelihoods will not be hurt by the pain that will be caused by failing to increase salaries or by trying to reduce the size of the bureaucracy.
Is there any help that should come from the international community to help Tunisian government fill the gap between resources and demand?
Absolutely. I think there's a big role for the United States, the European Union, European member states to play here in to provide some of that assistance, provide that band-aid that will get people through this painful short-term period. The international community is already doing some of this, but there is a lot more that they could do to help as well.
That was Sarah Yerkes of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace speaking with VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.